Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Blow the horn, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's a selfless big play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they can make us play against. They make us ask quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. You got Dave riding solo, and I'm going to tell you what, it's late Tuesday night and crazy busy at work, and these podcasts are no fun after a loss. I'm just going to tell you straight up. However, there's a lot of things that I liked that Alabama did in this game, and there's certainly some things that I did not like. But Alabama played well enough on whole to win. It just created too big of a hole. The team created too big of a hole for itself in the first half. We talked about after the Arkansas game that may have been the first, the best half. The first half may have been the best half of ball that the Tides played all season. And against LSU, the first half may have been the worst half of ball that is played all season. And it essentially created a hole that was too big to dig out of. Down by 20 at half, that's a big number. I have a great deal of pride and respect and appreciation that the team battled back to make it a 15-point game. Alabama outscored LSU in the second half and outgained from a yardage perspective over 100 yards. And so the resolve and mental fortitude that the team demonstrated in the second half is definitely something that we should hang our hats on. It makes the balance of this season challenging, but if we can have a couple of things break our way and we've got that sort of resolve in the tank, I'm not all in that it's going to happen, but if it does, I really like the chances with this team. Let's start off, and I'll hit some bullets. Tua, to call Tua a warrior, I think is spot on. Tua was 21 of 40, which is not his typical production, but the fact that he threw for 418 yards and four touchdowns is really an impressive performance. I think if you're in the selection committee, you have to appreciate that Tua came in, wasn't 100% healthy. Coach talked about that in the post game. His numbers were very un-Tua-like. Give credit to LSU for that. But some of that is just rust, and then there were drops, just three or four just uncharacteristic drops. Jerry Jeudy dropped one in the end zone. Devonta just right off his hands, and we've talked about his hands before. And then Henry Ruggs got hit just right in the face mask. I swear, if he didn't have a visor, it may have just gotten stuck in the face mask. He seemed to get hit pretty hard there. Those are truly uncharacteristic. We lost the game. again, I'm not trying to play sour grapes here, but there are enough things that happened that could have spun a different way, and Alabama would have won. So Tua, his performance certainly being one. Now, there's two sides to the Tua coin, or Tua sides to the coin. The fumble at the beginning, clearly that was rust, but that was very uncharacteristic. That was on a possession that was going to lead to points, potentially a touchdown on the fumble scamper. And then later, the interception that was thrown, and we can break that down. LSU scoring 14 points in about 30 seconds there to end the half is not how you win games, and that's something that easily could have been correctable. I want to talk. I want to come back and talk about that. I want to talk about Najee, 19 carries, 146 yards. He had his had a long of 31, which he had a couple bests. The long of 31 was a career best. The 146 was a career best as well. And then he just looked as good as he's looked while being with the Tide. There was a run that he ran up the middle and made a couple stutters, a couple moves in the middle, continuing to move forward, following his blocking. But as it was happening, just the thought in my head was the vision that he's showing in the hole. And then I kind of laughed at myself. I've never really, connected Najee and vision in that way before. He looked Mark Ingram-ish in the hole. And so that was certainly good for Najee. The fact that he's coming on, again, there's still season left, and there's still things that can break Alabama's way. And to see that development from Najee was darn impressive. There were certainly points in the game where I was just aggravated we weren't running the ball. I really thought, especially as the game wore on, we can run against these guys. We can run against these guys. And when we forced passes, now we had success passing the ball, so there's a balance to this. But there were times where we forced passes and had to turn the ball over, had to punt the ball away. Whereas I think if we had continued to just run the ball, pound the ball, that we would have had success. LSU defensive linemen were dropping like flies, and I think we could have gotten some additional momentum. I know the clock wasn't in our favor, and again, we had tremendous success passing the ball, but there were opportunities. I think there were chances that we could have continued to drive the ball on the ground, and I certainly wish that we could have done that. Both the passing performance and Najee's running performance speak to the performance of the offensive line. We have talked about them progressing and developing as the season has carried on, and I thought we saw certainly some of that on Saturday. Again, LSU's a quality opponent. They're the best team that we've played before, so they can make you look bad. But as a whole, I thought the line looked really good. Tua got rushed a couple of times, but he was in the pocket with a lot of time several times as well. And again, when your running back racks up a buck 40, your line's doing something really good there. We can talk about, again, with the penalty and the two scores before half, Landon Collins' penalty. He's got a little fire in him, and that came to the surface at a time that was not really good for it. But let me circle back to that. Again, the line was good. They weren't great, but they were really, really good. Jahlil, Billingsley, tight end. I think we played four, maybe five tight ends in the game against LSU. And he stepped in with Miller being out. He was really kind of the next man up, as Saban indicated, and I think that's right. But 19, he played the most snaps probably that he's played the rest of the season combined. I kept hoping that we were going to work the ball to him. And at one point I thought we did, but we didn't. It was another receiver in the slot. I really would have liked to have seen us do something with him in the passing game. But I like that he got a lot of run against LSU. That's a sort of a pressure pack situation for him to do that. And again, I thought the offense did well, did enough to win the game. Anytime you put 41 points on the board, anytime you pass for a buck 40, a buck 18, or I'm sorry, for 418, you have the opportunity to win the game. And we just kind of squandered away. We talked about Tua's fumble and then the interception. I kind of ride with Saban on this. It's easy to get mad at the interception. It's with 26 seconds left. It's easy to say, gosh, we should just have taken a knee there, and I wouldn't disagree with it, but especially in hindsight, and I think Coach said it right. You know, he said, "Gosh, if we knew we were going to do that, we would have just taken the knee and gone down, gone in the half down by 13. Down by 13 is better than down by 20. That's, you know, you lose by 5, and that's 7 points. You know, there's some transitive math there, but you got to look at the other side of the coin. We have a historically great quarterback in Tua. We have an explosive and aggressive passing game. You're down by 2 scores, and if you can cut it to 1 score going into half, that's a lot of momentum. Then also factor in how many times, as an Alabama fan, have you seen a coach take a knee, Saban's done it too, take a knee 20, 30, 35 seconds left to go in the half. They take a knee and just go to halftime. And you think, guy, with all of the weapons you have, why don't you just take a strike? What's the worst that can happen? Take a strike. What's the worst that can happen? Well, it turns out the worst that can happen is you can throw an interception, get a penalty. And this is almost like the Rube Goldberg machine of things going wrong, right? Because you could throw a pick six. I guess that's probably the worst thing. But, you know, then you've got this sort of comedy of errors where you throw a pick, you get a 15-yard penalty, and then, you know, your defense gags up a score. And so, you know, they get that. Maybe that's the worst thing that can happen. That's a pretty crappy thing to have happen. But what are the odds of that happening? And so I don't feel bad about the decision going for it in that situation, putting the ball up. I think hindsight's, you know, if you play to the result, then of course that's disappointing. If you play to the thought process and taking the calculated risk, I think on paper, probably everyone listening to this podcast in sort of in their heart of hearts would agree. Yeah, with Tua at quarterback, with those wide receiver weapons, with the fact that we're down by 2 scores, we need to steal sort of a possession here. And we know that we can throw it up, potentially score a touchdown, certainly get in reach of a field goal. We've got 26 seconds. You know, Tua doesn't turn the ball over. Let's take the shot here and do it. I think a lot of people would have agreed to do it, and you know, we got bit by it. So, sucks. Mini game ball for offense. I'm going to go Ali Cajo. He came in later in the game, and again, he came in later in the game near the goal line, short yarded situations where we were really having some success running the ball. He blew up a couple of folks, creating just a gaping hole for Najee to run through. I thought he looked really, really good. He's still recovering from a broken hand, so he's not 100%. But the fact that he came in and was able to lay some wood at the fullback position, really liked to see that. I'd like to see us, and I guess we don't see it this year because he's got a broken hand. Maybe, maybe if we play in January, but I'd like to see us do something with him out of that position. Maybe there's a flare pass. Maybe there's, you know, you sort of give it to the fullback dive or something. I think that'd be neat to see. But with his hand, maybe not. So defense, and there's a lot more sort of frustration, if you will, on defense. Alabama gave up 559 yards, 166 rushing, 343 passing, and gave up 8 of 15 third down conversions. Of course, the 46 points as well. On the whole, I don't think we had much of an answer for LSU, which is really frustrating, really aggravating. And, you know, given the opportunity, I'd love to play them again because I think we could come up with something. But on this day, we really had nothing for them. They moved the ball almost at will. The fact that Tua, you know, the fact that, you know, you think scoring on turnovers, that's a big deal. The fact that we actually fumbled the ball, you know, the 8-9 yard line, and they were able to score off of that. I mean, that's a 90-yard drive. That's pretty darn impressive. And so I think that just speaks to from the go, we look good moving the ball. We gagged it up, and LSU looked good moving the ball, and they scored touchdowns. That was something to see. You know, a couple of things, a couple observations maybe that I had. Not surprisingly, we played almost exclusively dime package, six defensive backs. we started, I think we came out early in a nickel and we went quickly to the dime. And I was counting six DBs, you know, all day. We started, and we've talked about this the last couple games, when we've been in a dime, it is typically, you know, a third and long or maybe even a second long. And it's truly a passing situation. And we do more of the rabbit rush up front. And so we'll bring in Markell Benton as the tight end, and then we'll bring in a Barmore as a tackle, and we'll really aggressively get after the quarterback. And that's the package that we brought in against LSU at first in the dime. And I think we realized, hey, we're going to be in dime all day, and they still have a potent running game. The running back is really impressive, and he's a little fire plug of a runner. And so we're going to need some beef in here. So we went to, you know, rabbit rush is sort of a Saban term. I don't know what he would call this. I'm going to call it a heavy dime or a big dime. We would rotate Barmore out, and we would bring in Fildarian Mathis. And then we played Tavita Masika probably about as much as I've seen him play, and certainly as early in a game as I've seen him play. He was in the first quarter when we went to a bigger dime package. And again, bigger up front, dime in the back with Masika, Fildarian Mathis, and others. And I felt that we gained a little bit of leverage on LSU when we did that. It seemed to slow their run down just a little bit, not a lot, but I think we got a couple of punts after we made that transition. I think LSU made some adjustments, and they continued to move the ball. But that was just enough of a change to slow them down a little bit. Unfortunately, Alabama was unable to capitalize on some of those turnovers. At one point in the game, we were both right at midfield. We both took a third down, and I think Alabama took a fourth down. And I think there were three straight possessions, Alabama twice, LSU once, were right at the middle of the field. We were just fighting over that same bit of real estate, and I was kind of kidding with some folks sitting around us that's one tough, you know, patch of grass right there. No one can seem to get across it. And then sort of the game, opened up from there, continued to open up. But there was a moment there that I thought we could get the upper hand with our defense. And that moment certainly passed. LSU had 34 minutes of time of possession. And I think we talk about time of possession and plays and wearing on the defense. I think that went against us this time. Markell Benton, we just mentioned him, because we were in the dime, he saw a lot more play, probably as much play as he's had, in any single game. He racked up eight tackles. That's a high number for his career. I thought he looked good. He looked out of sorts a couple times as well. Not too surprisingly. And, Barmore, it had just a fantastic day. I think he had just a couple of tackles, but he was active. He was everywhere. He had a tackle for loss, had half a sack, and was just incredibly active. Anytime who made the play, you could bet it was Barmore, and he was right there. And it really, it looked like he would have bigger numbers than he did. There was a play just before Alabama scored a touchdown. There was a play where, you know, the play got away from the line of scrimmage, but Barmore chased down, I want to say it was a receiver, maybe a runner, chased him down, tackled him a yard or two short of the first down. LSU punted, and then Alabama quickly came down and scored. And when Alabama scored, you know, turned to a guy that sit with and say, hey, you know, right there, that was a Barmore touchdown. Kept them from getting the first down, forced the punt, and then Alabama was able to score. So definitely going Barmore there. Trayvon had just sort of an up and down game. He looked out of sorts early, came on and played much better later in the game, had a number of tackles. Xavier McKinney had a number of tackles as well, probably too high a number than what you really want to see for a safety, but he does play some in-the-box safety. He is just a world-class player there at the safety position. We're probably going to lose him after this season. And Xavier McKinney, if you haven't sort of focused on him in a game, we've got a couple more chances this season. Put an eye on number 15 in the secondary, and he'll give you a good show because, you know, he's quite a player. Anthony Jennings, 2 sacks. He was dinged up at one point and came back, so I like the fact that he was healthy, and he looked really good. I think on the day, if you were to sum up, and I saw an article, maybe it was a quote from Saban, they were 25 missed tackles on the day, and I believe it. There were a number of times we had somebody wrapped up in the backfield, got a good hit in the backfield. If we make half those tackles, if we make a third of those tackles, then I think there's potentially a different outcome. Again, I'm not sour graping on this. I'm not if or nuts, candy, you know, whatever. I think this was a winnable game. It was a 5-point game, and there were a number of plays that that are just simple plays that could have added up to, you know, 5 points, 5 points or more. I think the sideline catch, and this was the catch just before half, I think that's the biggest sort of bullshit that's going. I will agree that he reestablished his foot, and that's what they were reviewing. They made the call that he was forced out, and so what I'm hearing is when you're forced out, the force is non-reviewable. But the reestablishing of the foot is reviewable, and in the course of the action of the play, that's one motion, and so you're segregating out part of the motion being reviewable and part of the motion not being reviewable. And that kind of stinks. And I think that's sort of bureaucracy at its worst. And, you know, let's get that out of football. It's either not reviewed at all, or let's review the football play, not some parsed out, languagey explanation of what you can and can't do. Either review the play or don't review the play, but don't give me sort of mixed measures on that. Mini game ball for defense. This is a hard one because the defense really struggled, but I do have 2 guys circled. I think Jared Maiden had a pretty good day. Again, you have another secondary player with double-digit tackles, and you know that's probably the wrong person you want making those tackles. But nonetheless, Maiden had 11 tackles, and he was certainly active, had some big hits. And then Barmore, we've talked about him. I'm at the point where I can't get enough of Barmore. Every time he plays, he makes a play, he makes an impact, he makes his presence known. And so if you're not paying attention, you gotta watch number 58 along the defensive front. He is active, and he's gonna make a splash play. He's gonna stand out, and so that's another player to put an eye on while you're watching the game. On special teams, you know, this is sort of the tale of two sided coins as well. Bolivas was 5 of 6 on his PATs. Waddle had a big punt return for a touchdown, and then Ty Pirine. Had 3 punts, averaging 48, almost 49 punts. Meanwhile, Bolivas was 5 of 6, which means he missed a PAT, not a field goal. Waddle had a fair catch right at the end zone, which he should have just let that ball. And this was on a punt, and so he should have not fielded that ball. He should have let it hit on a kickoff. On the kickoff, if you fair catch, they move it out to the 25. On a punt, they do not. And so you get it at the point of where you fair catch it. And so to fair catch it on the 5, he shouldn't do that. He should just let the ball bounce and go into the end zone. If it does, and again, that's sort of the gamble thing. 2 out of 100 times, it'll take a funky bounce and not go into the end zone. But 98 times out of 100, if it hits at the 4, 5, or 6, it's going to go into the end zone. And so, especially when the ball is turned over, it's going to go into the end zone. And he absolutely should have let that ball go into the end zone, get it on the 25. And so there was a good play, a better play that he made for the touchdown especially at that point in the game, Alabama needed that. Yes, that was a face mask, should have been called. It's moot that it wasn't called, because what are you going to do more than score a touchdown? I guess they could have applied that on the on the kick or the kickoff. And then Piron fumbled a snap, and you know he's got to get those nerves out. But damn, has he been just booting the ball, which is pretty darn impressive. Next up, Mississippi State. Kind of mixed on this. On one hand, I feel like, you know, we're going to be a mad Alabama team. We ought to go in there and just really beat up Mississippi State. And probably we do. I also know that Mississippi State's always a physical opponent. There's something about when we play them, they always sort of rise to the occasion. They play us tough. We just played a tough LSU game, and so we're going to have a little bit of wound licking. I haven't heard much about significant injuries, but still, you play a physical game and then you go play another physical game. There can be an additive effect there. And then I wonder, you know, do we play Tua? How much Tua do we play? Yes, I think we do play Tua. Yes, I think we try to come out aggressive. Boy, if we can get out to a 21 to nothing first quarter start, 21-3 lead, in the second quarter, then we might start looking at bringing in Mac Jones. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we are aggressive in trying to get some points on the board so that we can bring Tua out. On the whole, I think it's probably a 35-7 type ball game, and it might actually be a boring 35-7 style ball game. We'll just have to see how that goes. So let's change topics. Let's add a new topic tonight, or at least a topic for discussion this evening. Recording on Tuesday evening, and the playoff selection committee update has come out, and they've placed Alabama at number 5, or position 5, and I think that's probably as good as we can absolutely hope for. LSU getting number 1 helps us, actually, and the fact that we're number 5, Georgia's right ahead of us. Man, I hate to, Georgia's not going to lose to Auburn, and I hate the prospect of thinking that I would need to root for Auburn, but I would not, in this one instance, not be disappointed if Auburn were to knock off the Dogs. I think LSU will beat Georgia in the championship game, and I think the committee, if you start looking at bad losses or versus good losses, I think there's probably some people scratching their head saying, how is it that Georgia's loss to South Carolina is rated better than Alabama's loss to number 1 LSU? And I think the differentiator there is the win over Notre Dame. They were ranked at the time. And so if Notre Dame continues to falter, that may unplug some of the love for Georgia. So interesting things to watch there. There's other teams that we can definitely use some help by. Minnesota beating Penn State certainly doesn't hurt us. I think Minnesota will lose at least one game coming up, and that's really all we need them to lose. They'll certainly lose to Ohio State. I hope a pissed off Penn State gives Ohio State some run for their money. I don't know if that'll happen. And then we need some a little bit of disruption in the Pac-10. I don't like the prospect of 2 11-1 teams playing for the Pac-10 championship, and then you got an 11-1 conference champion versus, potentially an 11-1 Alabama team that's not a conference champion. Especially with our strength of schedule, I know it's Pac-10, but it's a position I'd rather us not be in. Although I think I'd probably like our chances on that one. Oklahoma, if they are 11-1 and a conference champion, I don't know that I'll like our chances against that one. And so maybe if Baylor does some work this week. Now, they did lose to K-State, and that's a pretty ugly loss. So we'll kind of see how that goes. But I think every week we need to root for someone to sort of knock off someone, or someone to blemish someone. And then I think Auburn beating Georgia not only gives Georgia another loss, but it gives Auburn a big win. And so, assuming obviously that we're going to beat Auburn, then that that buoys the team that we will have beaten. And so I think there's a little bit of thought process there. When we think about the selection committee, I'm not going to pretend to get in their heads, but if I think about the selection committee and I think about this Alabama thing, there's a couple of sort of intangibles that are going to come to my mind. It's going to resonate with me that Alabama came back against this LSU team. Alabama was down and out by 20. We've seen this Alabama team cave in these type of situations in this calendar year. And so the fact that Alabama came back and made it a game, the fact that Alabama came within not just the mistakes and an injured Tua and sort of a rusty Tua, those things, again, not sour grapes, but just sort of the reality of the day, came within an unrecovered onsides kick to having a possession. And I don't think there was many people in the stadium that would disagree that in the moment it felt like if Alabama gets that ball one more time, there's a great chance that they're going to score and win this game. I think there were a lot of sort of puckering Cajuns in that stadium when that ball went up and it got the bounce. Boy, if that ball lands in Alabama's hands, they were probably sniffing the heartache of another loss. And if you're in the selection committee, you just have to wonder, what if they had gotten that ball? What if one other bounce had gone a different way? That this Alabama team has demonstrated the resolve in this game and came just that close. The explosive play, and there's a great backstory. Devonta was interviewed. The explosive play with Devonta scoring that 80-yard touchdown right at the end of the game. And of course he had a phenomenal day with 7 catches and 213. But that last catch was really set up with you've probably seen it, but it was set up with a little bit of film study where every time that Tua turned to the sidelines to get instruction from the coach, the corner, Derek Stingley, really talented true freshman corner for LSU, he would turn to his sideline and look for direction from his coaches. And on that play, I think we were waiting for Alabama coaching was waiting for the right opportunity to sort of take advantage of it. And in that moment, boy, that sure was it. And so in that moment, Tua looked to the sideline, but that was just a ruse. That was just to get Stingley to look away. And in that moment where Stingley looked away, they snapped the ball. And that was just that quarter of a second separation that Devonta needed to get ahead. And of course, the ball was placed perfectly. And that touchdown was like magic. And you wonder, why haven't we been doing this all day? But there was a little sort of trickery built into that. And they were waiting for just the right time. But that explosiveness just right there is what made you think, gosh, if Alabama can just get this ball one last time, they have a legit chance to score. And I'll say this, I'm going to go back and talk special teams. The possession before, when Alabama punted, or when Alabama kicked off, the possession prior, when Alabama kicked off, that may have been the better opportunity to go for the onside kick. LSU had all of their guys up front, and they had a couple of guys in the back, and the whole body of the field was wide open. And it's one of those situations where, do you risk the onsides kick? I think the decision that the coaches had to have made, do you risk the onside kick now when there's still plenty of clock in the game? Do you risk it and then not get it? And then it's potentially game over when there's still, 3 minutes left in the game. Or do you trust what you see and trust the play that you have up your sleeve for an onsides kick? And you make it work, realizing at that point that you probably do need to steal a possession. You probably do have an onsides kick in your future. So do you take it then, or do you defer? And the easy decision is to defer. That's what the coaching staff did. And there's a little bit of sort of hindsight 2020. What if we had taken that onside kick earlier? Again, all of that is not to take anything away from LSU. That was just a damn fine performance that they put out there. Joe Burrow is everything and more that I thought he was. Certainly better than I thought he could be. Their running back was as talented and productive as I was afraid he could be. Their receivers were better than I gave them credit for, and I probably and as fans, we've probably gotten used to LSU having talented receivers that their quarterbacks didn't know how to take advantage of. A couple of guys are stars in the NFL that came through sort of unheralded, if you will, from LSU. And this team has put all the parts and pieces together. So in no way do I take anything away from LSU. But as an Alabama fan who has watched this team very closely this season, there were 5 points to be had. I'll say that. At any rate, I am pleased and optimistic with what this team still has ahead of it. The fact that, again, they battle back down from 20, the resolve that we saw, sort of the warrior Tua, to borrow that expression again, to see the development of Najee, the continued development across the offensive line, disappointed in the defense, but I saw a lot of resolve. I saw a lot of character on this team, and I think there's a lot of football left in this season. And although I'm a little nervous on Alabama getting to the playoffs, if we're in, I'd say we'll be a team to capitalize on getting the second chance. I think this team will appreciate the second chance, maybe more so than other teams. So we'll see how that goes. But Mississippi State, it might be over early, and it might be a boring second half as we just try to run out the clock and get back on the bus back to Tuscaloosa. So with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, T-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.